Hello, utility fleet professional world. Kurt Moreland, associate publisher with Utility Fleet Professional, with a special edition of Under the UFP Hood. You know, I've been at the NTEA Work Truck Show and heard a lot of great things about Ralph Cocotte, and he's got a real interesting story. So, Ralph, the CEO of Van Air, I want to welcome you to the program.
Well, thank you, and good morning.
Ralph, you were not born into the CEO role. I believe from what I heard, you started out turning wrenches.
That's correct, yes. I hearken back to commencement ceremonies in high school, and I think everyone has a defining moment in their life. And I grew up in East Chicago, Indiana, which is surrounded by steel mills, Enlin Steel, Youngstown Sheet and Tube, U.S. Steel, Bethlehem Steel. So the question in my younger days wasn't really where you were going to work, because all of our neighbors, all of our friends, all of my friends' fathers all worked at the steel mills. They were either placement firemen or worked at the mill. So it wasn't a question of what you were going to do after high school. I figured I was going to go work at the mill. Until, as I say, harken back to commencement, and a friend of mine said, "Ralph, what are you going to do after high school?" I said, "I guess I'm going to work at the mill." He said, "Well, you've always been mechanically inclined. I'm going to go be an automotive technician. Would you like to do that?" I said, "Beats the hell out of the coke ovens." So that began my career as an auto mechanic. So if it wasn't for those simple couple of words of you want to be an auto mechanic, I wouldn't be having this conversation with you today.
I can totally relate to that. My dad was actually a steel mill guy on the south side of Chicago.
Uh-huh.
He broke out of the generational steel mill thing by getting his degree through the VA and becoming a PE teacher. So I can totally relate to what you're talking about. So did you start out at a dealership, or did you?
No, I was twisting wrenches at a shop called PTL Tire and Auto. And it actually stood for Praise the Lord Tire and Auto. And from there, I hired in as a C mechanic for a large utility company working midnights in Gary, Indiana, and was, I guess, handpicked to become a transportation technician. And I moved into the roles of management. And a transportation technician in those days was, I was responsible for writing technical specifications for the acquisition of fleet equipment. And a piece of fleet equipment in that world was that if it had engines, wheels, tires, or steering wheel, it was a vehicle. Anything from trailers to earth-moving equipment to coal dozers at our generating stations, and everything in between, aerial devices, digger derricks, trenchers, tractor loader backhoes, and everything in between.
I'm sorry. When I talk to some of our readers, they say that, you know, you can find mechanics out there, but not a lot of mechanics that can work on diesel engines or work on utility specific equipment. How did you make that jump personally, or did you have to learn on the job?
You know, I've always been, from a very early age, I've always been mechanically inclined. So I have an intuitive nature where I look at things mechanically, and it just clicks in my mind. I know how stuff works, and I think that helped me in my career as both a mechanic and as a fleet administrator, and even to today as a CEO at Van Air. So it just something that it was innate in me from a very early age. I could look at something and kind of have a fairly decent understanding of how it worked. So picking up the mechanical skill sets to progress in my career came rather easy to me, both from a diagnostic standpoint, a troubleshooting standpoint, and from a maintenance and repair standpoint.
You know, I've talked to people who are mechanically inclined before, and they say that sometimes the most challenging part as you move up the utility fleet ladder is the office and working with personnel. How did you adapt to that? Although I've met with you, you're a very personable guy.
I think I've always, you know, got along well with people, my coworkers, my colleagues. I respected them, I think, and I think they had an equal amount of respect for myself and throughout the organization. It's just in my nature to try and develop people and bring out the best in each other and utilize the assets that we have and the strengths and weaknesses and capitalize on those strengths.
Yeah, and I've noticed that some of your salespeople or people who work for your company don't necessarily come over from compressor or equipment companies. Maybe they are fleet managers themselves. So it seems like you really pride yourselves on building relationships.
You know, it's true. One of the folks that works for us was in my former position at the utility, and we were able to have Michelle join us as a company, and she's doing a fabulous job. And she comes from a very similar background that I come from. But overall, I mean, our outside sales staff is a very diverse group of people. But most of them have, I would say all of them have a bit of mechanical aptitude. It's necessary so you could speak the language to the fleet people that you're talking to or potentially our end customers or listening to the voice of the customer as we do innovation and product development. So having a rudimentary sense of mechanical aptitude, I think, is very beneficial for the folks that we have in the field in a sales capacity.
So if you were to pass down your years of wisdom to the utility fleet managers or work truck fleet managers that are listening to this podcast right now, reflecting back on your career and with Van Air, what kind of advice would you give them? Or if you could do anything over again, what would it be?
You know, I think, you know, as I look back on my career and I look across the industry as a whole, the principal lines of promotion to a fleet administrator was, you know, a good, you know, mechanic, very good mechanic, shop supervisor, maybe superintendent to fleet manager. So you had a great deal of experience behind you to understand the ins and outs of fleet management. Today, I don't see that line of progression. People are sometimes picked out of different career paths with perhaps graduate degrees and maybe in accounting or something, and then they become the fleet managers. So they don't really understand the ins and outs of running and operating a fleet. It's a very dynamic. It's not a static piece of equipment. You put it in the dirt, it's going to break, right? So I think in today's fleet manager, I would say, you know, listen to the folks at the grassroots level. You know, they've got their hands in it, and pay attention to what they have to offer to the team.
You know, that's a great point. In the age that we're in now with telematics and everything, sure, and a lot of people are just looking at the numbers. That's great advice. Yeah, make sure that you're also, like you said, also looking, you know, down in the trenches too.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about how you ended up becoming the CEO of Van Air. So here you are, you're a utility fleet manager. How did this opportunity with Van Air present itself?
So in the mid-90s, the utility industry was deregulating. The utility that I worked for was in real estate, got into real estate development. They acquired a golf course. They were in light bulb manufacturing, selling home appliances, and a whole different diverse group of businesses that traditional utility companies weren't involved with. But as deregulation set in, they started to acquire different companies, right? And Bill Vanderslice was the president of Van Air Manufacturing in those days. And the company that I worked for, the utility company, was a customer of Van Air's from 1972 till the point where Bill contacted me. And he asked, he said, "Ralph, I know that the utilities that you work for is deregulating and they're buying a bunch of different companies. I want to retire to Florida. Do you think they would be interested in acquiring Van Air?" So I saw our chief financial officer in the hallway, who actually today happens to be on our board of directors 26 years later. And I said, "Steve," I said, there's a small company that we've done business with since 1972. The owner wants to retire, and he wants to know if perhaps we might be interested in acquiring them. He said, "Ralph, put a due diligence team together, value the company, report back to the board." So as I was doing that and getting ready to report back to the board, the utility company acquired a large water company for $285 million. They bought a utility company out east for $760 million, and they were negotiating to acquire a large, very large utility company in Ohio for $6.3 billion. So when I came to Steve and our chief financial officer, and I said, Steve, I did the valuations, what's the company worth? He just kind of brushed it off and says, Ralph, we're not buying small companies anymore. So in May of 1997, we lost our father to cancer. I was 37 years old. I called Bill and I said, Bill, it's off the table as far as concerned, but I have a personal interest in acquiring the company. So we negotiated a stock redemption agreement and I left the utility and acquired Vanair.
Wow, that's fantastic. Tell us briefly what Vanair does for those who may not be familiar with it, and we'll do a deeper dive into, you know, Vanair's acquisitions. But, you know, just for those who are just kind of tuning in and getting to know things, just, you know, give us the brief description of what Vanair does.
Sure. So our tagline is Vanair. We provide mobile power solutions. So what does that mean? And I guess I can harken back to when I first acquired the company. We had 18,000 square feet and about 14 employees out of New Buffalo, Michigan. And our primary product at that time was underdeck air compressors. In fact, Bill Vanderslice, the former president, kind of developed and patented or pioneered that technology using a PTO to drive an underdeck air compressor. So coming from the utility company that I came from, my focus and my vision of the company was that it's a moderately mature company, and our primary market was investor-owned gas and electric utility companies, which we had done business with even in those early days with most of them in North America. So if you look at a bell curve on the maturation curve, even today, 26, almost 27 years later, we're still at the beginning of that bell curve. So what we really do is not only are we doing underdeck air compressors, but we're doing all-in-one power systems, generators, welders, battery boosters, battery starters, hydraulic air compressor systems, vacuum excavation equipment, truck upfitting, battery boosting, battery charging. Now electrification of all those, which would traditionally be ICE engine applications. So our Epic line is growing significantly, and that's really an electrification of what would traditionally be ICE engine driven components. That's really what the core of our business is.
Yeah. So you really specialized in fleet or adapting to mobile.
Correct. Yeah. I mean, and again, a vehicle can be very diverse, right? it could float, fly, have wheels, engines, or a tire, right? And it's a vehicle to us. And with the advent of our Epic line, our electrified line, it's agnostic. It doesn't care what it's going on. It could go on a Conestoga wagon, right? That's opened up significant market opportunities that traditionally haven't been there, particularly if you look at like a transit van market. Hard to put power operated equipment in a transit van, but with the electrification, it enables us to do that.
Well, anybody who listens to my podcast knows that I love to take a little bit of an intermission, and I love a good celebrity encounter story. Now, you know, one of the things that I really admire about you is, you're not the type of CEO that just, you know, sits at the desk. You get out there, you get out in the field, you get out to the trade show, so you're well-traveled. Have you had any celebrity encounters?
I actually have. This goes back a few years ago. I happened to be staying at the Hilton in Oakland, California. Had some business in the Bay Area, and I went down to the lounge to have a beer, and in walked the largest group of men I've ever seen in my life. I'm 6'3". 170 pound with a 33 inch waist. These guys has arms bigger than my waist. It was the Oakland Raiders. So we're sitting down and I said, okay guys, who wants to arm wrestle for $5? So then I go outside to get a breath of air, and a lady asked me, she says, what are you in town for? I said, I'm in town on business, but I'm leaving for Chicago in the morning. I said, what brings you to Oakland? She said, I'm an entertainer. I said, I recognize your work. She said, you might. I'm Gladys Knight. I said,
oh, my goodness.
I said, can I be an honorary PIP? She says, you sure can, honey. So I've often thought about putting on my business card, Ralph Kokot, Chief Executive Officer / PIP.
That's a great story, yeah. And then you were like, I'm going to get on the midnight train to
Georgia, to Chicago. Uh-huh.
You know, I've read a couple books about the Raiders. I'm really kind of fascinated with their team. They had really kind of took some misfits from around the league and made that into a championship team. Was like Penny the Snake Stabler, or did you recognize any?
No, I really didn't. They must have all been defensive linemen or offensive linemen, because, I mean, they were all like 6'6", 6'7", 320, just massive human beings.
Wow. You don't want to look at them the wrong way.
Yeah, if you've never been next to, you know, a professional football player or somebody that big, you can't really get a full grasp of how big these guys are.
We used to have a neighbor that was a lineman on the Chicago Bears, and I would see him at the tavern after softball games, and the first time he shook my hand, he crushed it, and I didn't know whether he did it on purpose or whether he didn't even realize how strong his hands were. So from then on, whenever I saw him, I would squeeze his hand as hard as I could just to offset. That is amazing. Well, thanks for that story. That's a good one for sure. So let's get back to business. We kind of alluded to Van Air has been busy. Another thing I really admire about your company is you guys don't stand still. You've been doing something different every year, whether it's acquire a company or whether it is launch a new product. So let's take us back. I kind of want to go back to you guys acquired Goodall, which is kind of like roadside assistance equipment. What made you guys feel that was a good fit for your company?
So I can go back maybe a little bit before that. Our first acquisition was in 2009 when we acquired Aranark out of Hiawatha, Kansas. And that was really their first all-in-one power system, right? That combined air compressor, generator, welder, battery booster, battery charger. So that was kind of our introduction into that battery boost, battery charge market. And from there, we started innovating and developing supercapacitor technologies, and then we had an unsolicited inquiry as to whether or not we would be interested in acquiring a company out of Minnesota, Eden Prairie, Minnesota. I immediately knew who that was, even though it wasn't announced in the solicitation. And I said, you know what? That's Goodall. They've been around. I mean, anybody that's twisted a wrench in their life knows the Goodall name or the Starall name. I mean, they've been around for 75 years. So when that company was being marketed, I talked to our executive team and I said, we really need to take a strong look at Goodall, that the name is worth a considerable amount in itself. Well, because we were moving in the direction of actually competing with Goodall. So it was maybe more of a strategic buy. So it became available. We did our due diligence, and we closed, on election night, in 2016, and acquired them in very early 2017.
That's fantastic. At the work, go ahead. Any other?
So after Goodall, we acquired Cyclone, which was an air compressor manufacturer out of Staten Island, New York. We acquired them in 2017, and most recently we acquired Grip out of Toronto. And that's idle mitigation technology in 2024. Just closed on that right before the work truck show.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. So if I understand that correctly, when I was at the work truck show, you used to buy their product
and
incorporate it into your product, so you just kind of brought them into the fold.
We did, correct. I mean, we think that idle mitigation along with HVAC is going to be a significant opportunity for us. For many, many different reasons, particularly for carbon emissions reductions, in that vein.
Yeah, that was an exciting announcement at Work Truck for sure. So, I consider you a visionary, and without giving away too many company secrets, what are you looking at for the future of Vanair? And of course, we're all talking about EVs. Is Vanair's next step to get into the EV charging business?
We already are. We already have level 2 EV charging capabilities with our Epic system. One of the things that we challenge our team here is to really listen to the voice of the customer and open ourselves up to, you know, what it is that they're demanding in the marketplace or how we can improve our product. But I hearken back to the early days of Henry Ford when he was asked, if I asked my customers what they want, they would have said they wanted a faster horse. So sometimes you have to maybe be on a bit of a cutting edge and develop technologies and applications that the customers don't even know they want or need yet, and then introduce it to the marketplace, test it, get it in field demonstrations, and gauge reaction and make adjustments from there.
That's amazing. I can tell that you're a historian of the of the fleets market.
It's been in my blood for nearly 50 years.
That's amazing. Well, we will look forward to keeping our eye on Vanair. Again, you're a company that's moving and growing rapidly, and we'll be keeping an eye on you to see how you guys grow in the future. I want to thank you very much for being a guest, and I also want to thank you for being a utility fleet professional advertiser. You guys have always been a good sponsor of our content throughout the years, and I want to thank you for that as well.
My pleasure. Thank you, Kurt.
Ralph, thanks again for being a guest, the CEO of Vanair, and this is Kurt Moreland, associate publisher of UFP, just reminding everybody to roll safe out there.
The views, information, and opinions expressed during this podcast are solely those of the individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of Utility Business Media and its employees. It is strongly recommended that you discuss any actions or policy changes with your company management prior to implementing them.